This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The controversy over the filibuster. It turns on the remarks of two senators. I welcome Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution to comment on the remarks of the two senators, the debate over the filibuster, and what is driving this unusual conduct of the President of the United States these last days to speak out against the Republican Party and against two senators in his own party who are standing firm about the filibuster and yet are accused of being and fill in the blank. The headline from the Washington Post, Kyrsten Sinema preempts Biden, dashing Democrats' illogical hopes she would move on the filibuster. First paragraph. The timing of Senator Kyrsten Sinema's speech Wednesday, the 13th of January, was what really distinguished it from her previous calls for bipartisan action rather than unilateral rule changes. We have but one democracy, said the senator. We can only survive. We can only keep her if we do so together. Richard, a very good evening to you. Kyrsten Sinema spoke, and then Joe Manchin has issued statements that are consistent with the idea both senators have advanced for some time, that though they are in great sympathy for this legislation or that legislation, they will not undermine the 60-vote filibuster rule in place in the U.S. Senate, that a rule that has been supported by, among others, the Majority Leader, Mr. Schumer, and the President of the United States, Mr. Biden. At this point, the filibuster argument, is it satisfactory for us to move away from this? Or has this revealed something about how the country is now conducting its affairs? Good evening to you, Richard.
Yeah, hi. Well, I think, in effect, it's a kind of sordid illustration of how far off the mark the President and Mr. Schumer turn out to be. They don't want to get rid of the filibuster universally. They only want to get rid of the filibuster when there's a short-term benefit, i.e. the voting bill that they think works in their behavior. There was something having to do with the Russian pipelines and the German pipeline, and the Democrats exercised the filibuster on that just the same day. Well, you can't possibly run a situation where it's a filibuster for you, but there's no filibuster for me. So the simple requirement of consistency is one that's been violated. Secondly, I think in general there is a kind of a strong sense that majority will is fragile. And if you're talking about a 51-50 majority, that is not enough to create legitimacy behind a change which is going to fundamentally alter the way in which American institutions take place, which is what the voting bill does. And so wholly apart from its merits, which I think are all negative, this is not the kind of thing that you want to do. And then what makes it even worse is what you tie up the filibuster in the voting bill is to essentially to scandalize and defame your opponents by saying anybody who disagrees with me on the merits of this bill is a defender either of Jim Crow or Bull Connor or Jefferson Davis. And so what they're trying to do is to make the Republican Party into a group of racists. And I think that that's utterly indefensible and inexcusable. What it does is it creates increased polarization in the American debate, and it makes it impossible to work on any other issue with somebody who's basically taken every foul word in the English language and appended it to your policies. There's also, I think, here a real kind of hypocrisy. If you check back at the kinds of requirements that are going to be put into place in Georgia and compare them to the kinds of requirements that are in places like New York and Massachusetts, the northeastern states have more restrictive policies than the Georgia state. And so what you're doing, in effect, is that you're not only deciding that what you want in some cases, you're being inconsistent. You have to do things my way, but our states can do it whatever way it turns out that they want to do. So I think, and I think everybody regards this as a kind of fiasco. What makes it even worse is the president kind of speaks that you don't know whether he's semi-hysterical or near catatonic in the way in which he starts to approach this stuff, but he's so far over the top that it's extremely difficult to give him credibility, not only on this issue, but anything else. I mean, it's like watching the wheels fall off a bus as it starts to speed up. This is not going to end happily for him, and it's not going to end happily for the nation.
You report in your Defining Ideas piece for the Hoover Institution, and Richard is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution in addition to teaching law at NYU and the University of Chicago, that the Democratic majority, and the majority exists because of the tie-breaking of the vice president. The president of the Senate is the vice president of the United States. That the majority moved from Build Back Better, the legislation of the fall of 2021, which had attached to it some very large statements of what was going to happen if it wasn't passed, moved from that, that was not successful because of the reluctance of Senator Manchin, among others, to go along with the scale of it, moved from that to the Voting Rights Act, actually two voting rights. One is called the Freedom to Vote Act, and the other is called the John Lewis Act. Both have different parts of the story. But, Richard, that suggests that there was no sincerity here. That if the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Act were as primary a concern of the president and his counselors as they now say, then they would have preceded all of the debate about the infrastructure, which passed last fall with a bipartisan vote, and the Build Back Better. So the suggestion here is that this was brought up in a partisan fashion as a wedge. Do you maintain that this is a good strategy to continue? Well, if that doesn't work, we'll go to this. And at no point are you certain that they believe any of it?
Well, I mean, I think they believe it all too sincerely in some sense. That is, they see huge partisan advantage that they get from it. But it is extremely troublesome. What happens is they understand that the way in which inflation moving today is that huge injections of cash into the economy is only going to make the situation worse. And so that whatever certain people are going to get from the direct transfer of wealth, other people are going to lose even more so by the depreciation of the currency that they have, which reduces their options in the marketplace on the way in which they could pay their rent, pay their gas bill, and do lots of other things that people have to do. Oh, the reason they switched, therefore, is that they found out that they couldn't get that one through given the way the company is gone. And the problem about the voting bill is it's like everything else. It's a partisan act. They are trying to put into place a set of institutions that they think will enable them to consolidate the Democratic hold on the nation. And I don't think that is going to work either, because it has become so clearly partisan. If the president wanted to speak in a way that tried to bring people into this thing, he would have said, here are the kinds of defects that we've observed in previous elections. Here is the way in which we are going to be able to stop them. Instead, what he does is he has basically given the following different kind of line, which is, you saw what happened, ladies and gentlemen, on January 6, 2021. The Republican behavior is just a continuation of that evil strategy for insurrection by other kinds of means. This is not going to play well in the United States. It's just completely hysterical in terms of the way in which it starts to go. I mean, we had this problem similarly with Charlottesville 2017. It was a real disaster. 2018, you couldn't get 10 people to a meeting to support what had happened the year before. I think there's nobody on the Republican side, even the Trump supporters, who think that a repetition of January 6th is going to help their cause. It's been the biggest thorn in their side since it has happened. And so what they're trying to do is to link the two things together, and that is also a form of demagoguery. It has been, I think, one of the sorriest displays of public behavior, and it's born largely of frustration. They have a bare majority, they want to bulldoze it, and they get two people who won't go along publicly. But I think it's actually deeper than that, John. My view about this is there are probably 5 or 6, maybe even as many as 10 or 20 other Republicans, who feel exactly the same way, who are up for elections, possibly in close states, and they don't want to have any part of this either. So there's another way to think about this, which is to say they know they're going to lose. And they're happy to lose, because what they will then do is go to the public in the next election and say, you have to vote these rascals out of office, all of these Republicans, because essentially they're supporters of Jim Crow and Jefferson Davis. And the same thing with Build Back Better. They can say, you stopped us from saving the economy. Both of these pieces of legislation are, in my view, complete disasters in terms of what they want. But they are better off as a party arguing from the fact that they weren't passed than trying to defend the consequences of what would place if they are passed. So I think the Democratic strategy is to lose, quite consciously, to know that they're going to lose, and then claim that the defeat explains why it is that the state of the American Republic is so bad today. It's pretty cynical as far as I'm concerned.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing and defining ideas about the ambition of the Democratic majority and the President of the United States to suspend or step around or in some way amend the filibuster project, the filibuster detail in the Senate in order to win certain pieces of legislation. But the professor mentions inflation in his remarks, and that is for all of us. That is not a partisan matter. It's here. It's global. And when we come back, I'm going to draw upon the professor's thinking as a classical liberal. What is to be done with the inflation that seems to be inherent in the pandemic, in the supply chain, and perhaps in the way that the government, both the Republican government of Mr. Trump and the Democratic government of Mr. Biden, have conducted their affairs these last years? I'm John Batchelor.